Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast, the 121st episode, as Mike puts. However, we all know that's completely jargon.
Well, you know.
Welcome, Mike.
Hi.
You're fired.
Nice.
No, it is the 112th episode of the Open Paddock Podcast, and interesting enough, it falls on 11/21, because that means that the first three numbers in the date also represent our show.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, either way.
The last three represent last week. I mean, yeah. It has to mean something, right?
It was written in the stars. We're destined for greatness. Well, welcome everybody to this week's show. It's going to be a bit of a light one, as news is coming out, but not at a feverish pace. We're going to do a little bit of speculation in the world of rally. We're going to talk about rally a little bit. We're going to talk about a couple headlines, including sports car. We're going to talk about IndyCar. Lotus finally has pulled their head from the sand. And then we're going to talk about Formula One, because this week there's just stupid stuff happening at Formula One, so we need something to make fun of. And usually NASCAR would be the area where we make fun. However, Mike, and this may come as a shock to you and a lot of our listeners, I watched the championship race yesterday. Yes, because I was that desperate for motorsport.
Did you watch all of
it? I did.
I hear it was rain delayed like 14 times.
Well, I was listening. I was at Walmart buying a bunch of culinary supplies, like bowls, glasses, cups, you know, bunch of things, because I didn't have anything since the ex-wife took pretty much everything. So I was like, well, you know, I'll go out and get this stuff. So on the way home, I'm listening to the series. I'm like, oh yeah, NASCAR championship race is on. I want to see Tony Stewart win. I'll listen and watch the race. So I'm listening to it. Then I get home and I start watching it on the PC. And, I'm playing Xbox at the same time. And so when it goes to rain delay, I'm just like, brr, whatever. And I'll tell you, when the last 50 laps of that race was absolutely fantastic. That was exactly how a championship battle is supposed to take place. Now, Tony Stewart, as if you guys don't pay attention to NASCAR, I'm sure you've heard, Tony Stewart had to win the race to be champion. He had to win the race or have Carl Edwards pretty much crash out. But he had to win the race, and that's exactly what he did. He won the race, and it was a fantastic race win for him and his team. And securing his third NASCAR Sprint Cup championship, as well as his first as a driver owner,
And his first in the chase format too.
Yeah, and the first in the chase format. Now there's some problems, however, with how the chase went, because Tony Stewart won five of the last 10 races, and he tied Carl Edwards for the championship. If you win half the races of the Sprint Cup Championship of the last 10 in their quote-unquote playoff format, you should have won the championship years ago. And they say, well, you know, it comes down to consistency. You got to finish consistently. He won five races. He won half of your playoff races. You should have just called it done after that and gave him the damn trophy. He won half your races.
Fair enough.
I don't get it. He did what a racing driver is supposed to do. He won the races, but he wasn't as consistent. Did you know that Carl Edwards' average finish was 4.7? He averaged finishing in the top 10 over the chase. That's why he was able to do what he did and tie. Any other time, he would have won the championship. However, Tony Stewart won five races. He should have been champion regardless. So
you kind of like Bernie's medal idea, huh?
You know what? Damn right. I'm on board with the troll for that one. Because you know something? This year, I mean, it's obvious. Vettel would have won the medals. Vettel would have won the championship, no matter what system you threw at him. So, you know, this year it would have made sense. However, you know, other years maybe not so much. But, I mean, he won five of the last 10. He is champion even if he loses.
Yeah, it wouldn't have affected anything in Formula One because Vettel would have still had all the medals, and the bottom three teams, HRT and, you know, those guys, they would still have no points. And thus, their teams still have yet to prove a point.
Yeah, well, it was amazing. AJ Foyt called Tony Stewart, as you know, obviously Tony Stewart, previous IndyCar background, AJ Foyt, you know, the whole lot. And AJ Foyt actually called Tony Stewart on the phone after the race and told Sir Stewart, aka Smoke, that it was the best race of his life in holding off Carl Edwards.
Yeah, Tony said it brought some tears to his eyes. Yeah, keep in mind that when Tony started his team, he called AJ and asked him if he could use the number 14 to honor AJ. Mm-hmm. And even before that, you know, as far as their tie-in together, AJ owned some of Tony's cars in USAC when he was coming up through USAC. So they've known each other a long time. They're but it's clear that Tony is a fanboy. So that was icing on the cake there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's like that would be like me winning, like, you know, just hypothetically speaking, if I won the NASCAR championship and I had the number, you know, 7 on my car to honor Michael Schumacher, and then Michael Schumacher, you know, would call me and say, hey, that was the most impressive race you've ever drove. Of course I'd be flattered, and I would probably also cry. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those kinds of things. So it was a really cool story to hear. And then Schumacher would probably tell me I'm an effing idiot because NASCAR's dumb in his eyes. And I, you know, so
they race on ovals. It does not compute.
Yeah, right. You are dangerous. That's right, Schumacher. I am dangerous. To steal a line from Top Gun.
Yeah, so's your driving.
Yeah, right. I'll have you know that the safety of my car and my crew comes first. So, how deliciously trashy we've brought Top Gun into the mix.
Yeah, indeed. So moving on from NASCAR, because, you know, that's not our normal forte, but shout out to all the NASCAR fans who always make a loud noise when we complain about NASCAR. Hey, great finish to the championship. And Tony's one of the few guys in NASCAR that I can get excited about.
Yeah.
So pretty cool to see.
Yes, thank you. And yes, please. I know this may have shocked some of you, and I'm sorry if we may have even killed some of our listeners because they've went into cardiac arrest. We are not liable for that.
I have to give a shout out. I didn't realize he was running in Cup, but I was bouncing in and out from the radio coverage of the race, and I heard Cole Witt's name pulled out. And two years ago, he was racing sprint cars. Mm. So it's good to hear the USAC boys moving up the ladder.
Indeed. Well, let's go ahead and move on into the bit of the sports car. As you know, we've been talking here the last couple of weeks about the World Endurance Championship and the fact that they've created a clashing date with the Petit Le Mans race down in Georgia at Road Atlanta. You know, the date clash is still there. However, if you go over to speedtv.com, their sports car writer, John, I'm always afraid that I'm going to mess it up, but I'm going to say
Johnny D.
Yeah, Johnny D, as he'll be known. Way to avert a crisis there.
Yeah, indeed.
Johnny D over at speedtv.com. He actually wrote a fantastic article, actually, talking about really the culmination of all this sports car goodness. You have, obviously, the wee days of ALMS and Grand Am when it kind of sucked, and then it got good. And you know, and Daytona Rolex is getting pretty good. With Grand Am is getting kind of good. Or at least I enjoy it. I know you are not a fan, but I enjoy it. And so, you know, but he brings up a lot of great points in his article, but then further goes down to actually put out some kind of, hey, this is what you should do. You know, for, you know, these are some of the avenues that the ACO/FIA/Petit Le Mans, American Le Mans series people could take to avoid this crisis. And would you care to elaborate for us?
Oh, I just found the article very interesting in the discussion of the fact that, you know, it probably wasn't a good idea to take the one of the flagship events in the ALMS series and schedule Bahrain head-to-head against it. Now, as far as his ideas on moving forward, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Sorry, as far as things go, the problem is you've got the ALMS who's struggling big time, and then you've got this new WEC, and an event that should be part of the WEC is spurned in favor of the Crown Prince of Bahrain, who's going to pay them a buttload of money to come to his unstable little country and be a showpiece to show them how he's repressed the masses into believing they're okay. Formula One, I'm looking at you as well.
Yes.
I don't know what the problem is at the FIA, but they need to get this figured out because as far as things stand, that whole Middle East right now is a powder keg. Just look what's happening in Egypt right now. And you can see that they're still not happy over there. And
yeah. Well, you know, social science, if you will, 101. You know, these people in the Arab Spring spring up, overthrow their governments because they're tired of being oppressed. And honestly, they don't really have much better an idea of what the hell they want. Which then causes giant power vacuums and people. And I mean, eventually, at the end of the day, it's going to go back, you know, unless something drastic is done. It's going to go back to exactly the way it was, where people will be oppressed, a new person will take – because one of the things you have to worry about when you start having situations like this is people will cling to one person, a la Germany 1936. You know, one guy comes in and says, I will put food on your table. I will do this. I will get you jobs. I will, you know, unlock our economic potential. And boom, you got another guy – who then begins to oppress people after falsely promising, but, you know, okay, here's your jobs and here's your bread, but here's what I want you to do for me. And, you know, and it's just one of those things where people will be continue to be oppressed unless something drastic happens. But enough of the social science kick. I just don't understand why the FIA at all is even messing with the Middle East. I know they have money. I know they have oil. I know they have a crap ton of money. However, you're not a safe place to go. And you probably won't be for the foreseeable future until you get a handle on what the hell's happening in your countries.
Yeah, and then, you know, reading some of John Daigie's some of his speculation as to what's going on is his speculation, this is a slap in the face of the ALMS. For not taking one of their flagship events. And he goes on to speculate that this could be a kind of a sign of things to come of the FIA severing completely with the ALMS. That as well. Moving away from ALMS to try and more align with Grand Am. And, you know, maybe moving to the high banks the high banks at Florida. Moving to Daytona with those cars, it would be ridiculous, in my opinion. I mean, Daytona is grandiose and all that, you know, as far as being considered in sports car, mainly because you've got a 24-hour race that starts the season. I mean, that's really, to me, that's the only glamour of that event. Mm-hmm. It's a roval, and it's a really crappy one at that.
It's not an overly fantastic road course, that's
no,
for sure.
No, hey, take turn 1, 2, 3, 4, go to the infield.
I've drove the Daytona layout on the iRacing sim, in the Grand Am prototype, which on that sim is a pig. But when you drive that track, I mean, it's not overly challenging. It's not easy. But it's not overly like, oh my God, this is to die for. I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's like you said, a roval. I mean, you go a couple corners, yay. And I think there's, you go in to that, off the banking out of the trioval into that first little corner. Then you go down that long straightaway into what I believe to be called the International Horseshoe. And I mean, you do that, and then you go through a high speed kink. And then there's, I mean, there's like maybe three more corners after that onto the banking. You go through the bus stop chicane area and back onto the banking. I mean, it's not that complex of a roval. It's really simplistic design, if you ask me. So yeah, you're right. It's mainly the glamour of, you know, the Rolex name, the poshy Rolex name, the fact that there used to be, you know, Ferraris and stuff that competed, Corvettes and everything. And, you know, ever since the Rolex cars got there, I mean, they're just kind of riding on those coattails, if you will. And, I mean, it's not their fault. I mean, their cars are fine, I suppose, but the race itself is just pretty simplistic. But no offense, I love to watch it. I think it's a fantastic race to start the season off. However, this year it will not start the season off, as I think Monte Carlo happens before the Monte Carlo rally happens before Rolex. So,
yeah, all of it said, you know, that it's clear that there's some major changes going on in the sports car front. Just the formation of the WEC was it was a complete change. When it happened, I was shocked, because for years we've heard how the ACO and the FIA just saw things different, and they were moving in completely separate directions, and there were times when they were doing things completely opposite each other, just to spite each other. And now you've got this alignment of those two. Who knows? Maybe it's because Max Mosley is no longer part of the FIA, and he was very clearly in favor of the dominance of F1, whereas Jean Todt sees this, you know, as a much more ecumenical approach as to, you know, he's clearly put more resources into rally than Herr Mosley put into it. So,
yeah, he's really kind of taken the.
You like how I slipped that Herr Mosley in there?
Yeah, exactly. As they emerge from the Chelsea basement. yes. But yeah, I mean, it would appear as though Mosley is very Formula One centric. The rest of the stuff could just fall off the face of the earth. Whereas Jean Todt, whether it be from things that Mosley did, I don't think so. But I think that overall the sports car world and the rally world are benefiting from Jean Todt being there and kind of going into that umbrella. Because I think the FIA can offer, you know, obviously WRC was already there, but I mean, especially sports car. I think the FIA can just offer a little more stability in terms of the championship and all that. So it will definitely be interesting to see as we go forward. But shall we move on to rally?
Indeed.
All right, well, I'll be brief with it because there's not a whole hell of a lot to talk about. But we did have last week, we said on the show that Citroën were going to have a big presser, you know, at their home base. Typically not something that happens very often, and especially one that makes headlines. And our thoughts were confirmed when Citroën announced Mikko Hirvonen as Sebastian Loeb's teammate for 2012. The deal is a two-year deal that will see Hirvonen at Citroën until 2013. Hirvonen will make £3 million as compared to Loeb's £20 million.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, as you put, it is a very Rubens-esque seat.
Yes. Second fiddle. How does that feel?
Well, it will prove to be a culture shock for Mikko, who's used to preferential number one treatment at Ford. But, you know, at the end of the day, Loeb is your man. Mm-hmm. He's 8 times world champion. He set the world for most FIA championships collected by a single driver, surpassing Mr. Schumacher, who has 7 driver's world titles. And also, if you want to count the 7 world championships that Valentino Rossi has in the MotoGP, he is the most decorated champion of all time. So, well done. Well done, Mr. Loeb. I don't like it, but I'll respect you for it, by God. So, and now that really leaves us into, well, what now? Citroën's let go of Sebastian Ogier. He's on the market. not a lot of talk on where he's going. And that brings us to M Sport. M Sport still trying to secure Ford for, you know, their works money. And basically the way it boils down is Ford needs, and I'm going to be releasing an article if I haven't already by the time you hear this, just basically showing, you know, M Sport runs Ford's rally operations. Ford is not a manufacturer's, a works team like Citroën, and the fact that Citroën do Citroën Rally. Ford farms out their rally to M Sport and the boys at Malcolm, you know, Malcolm Wilson's boys. He runs the show and makes a hell of a lot of money from Ford for running that operation. However, if Ford leaves the WRC, which they may, depending, you know, they Ford would or M Sport would probably still run some Fiestas in the championship, but that money is going to be coming out of Malcolm Wilson's pocket. And with not having Abu Dhabi around next year, sponsorship-wise, it seems, that's a real money issue because now you have to find big-time sponsorship to support your Fords, you know, the Ford Fiestas you have, because Ford itself is not supporting you anymore. So it's still a lot in the air. We're still waiting from Ford to see what exactly they're going to do. A lot of it hinges as well on their World Touring Car Championship bid, as they want to have three Ford Focus touring cars available for that championship. So it all really kind of pins around that. I think they'll stay. I still stay with what I said last week. I think Ford will join. I think they need to for their product and their brand. I think the WRC is a much more visible championship than the World Touring Cars. Nothing against World Touring Cars. I think it's fun to watch. I just think that the WRC is a bigger piece of that pie, especially with your product rating now. When you secure victories, is not only against Citroën. You're going to be beating Mini. You're going to be beating Volkswagen. You need to be beating teams like that for your product value. I think your product value is going to rise substantially with the entry of those in there, of those manufacturers.
Yeah. The only way I could excuse Ford pulling out of Rally is if they go ahead and put in an IndyCar engine next year.
That'd be awesome. Not going to happen, but that'd be awesome.
Well, you know, by next year, I mean 2013.
Oh, perhaps. But, yeah, we'll have to see where it goes from there. But definitely some speculation. And that leaves drivers. You know, who's going to team with Yari Mati? Because we have to assume that even if Ford pulls backing on the program, M Sport's still going to run the Fiestas they have. They have a whole effing fleet of them. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, obviously you've got Yari Mati Latvala number one. A lot of people think Ogier is going to go there. I'm not as certain as I was last week about Ogier's presence at Ford. I'm really starting to think that perhaps he may be heading into Volkswagen in 2013. I really think that is something that is going to happen. He may make a one-year stop with Ford just to stay fresh in a car, or we may see Ogier driving those Skoda Fabia S2000s in the SWRC, you know, working with the team and beginning feedback on that process. So, you know, let's just say we take Sebastian Ogier out of the picture. He's not going to go to Ford. Let's just say. Nothing confirmed, obviously, at this moment. You've got Oytanek, who has a long-term five-year, well, it will be 4 years after 1 year, four years left on his M Sport developmental contract. He says that he'd like to do more world rallies at the highest level. You also have, and I just found this out because I was doing heavy research on it, Juho Hänninen does not have a contract in 2012 with Skoda. Nobody knows if he's going to be joining the Volkswagen ranks or if he's going to be open. He was quoted earlier in the year as saying that if any WRC team offered him a ride, he would take it. We know Ford likes the Finns. Juho's shown some amazing pace on both tarmac and and gravel. I think that he would be an awesome fit for the team because I think he's very fast. He's much like Yari Mati Latvala is in the sense that he's really fast now and he's still young, but he's slightly reckless. So you probably won't be winning championships at a manufacturer level. You may, but I think if I looked at Oytanek, Yu Ohanian, you know, as the two right now that really jump out at me, I'm thinking, you know, why the hell not sign Hanninen? I've been advocating for the guy ever since the start of the year. He's a fantastic talent, and he, yeah, he's a little rough around the edges, but he has the potential of being world champion in the WRC, and I think that he needs a lift in that Ford, and I think he would be a good fit. He's a well-rounded driver on both surfaces, and he'll give you a chance to win rallies. You know, maybe not within the first year, but then again, you know, Latvala is the title contender, and I think Hanninen would be a good choice, you know, provided where they go. But you know, Ford is really good at farming out their talent within the M Sport organization, because Malcolm Wilson likes to build within, because he can get drivers a little bit cheaper if he manufactures them, as opposed to going out and signing somebody like Ogier. Ogier is going to command a large contract if you try to bring him into the mix. And, you know, that takes a lot of that money that we were talking about out of the picture. Whereas you can bring up a guy like Tanak or Hanninen, and you don't need to pay them a lot of money. You can get away with paying them the £3 million, the £4 million a year to race, and they will do that. So I think for sure it's something they need to look into, and I think, you know, I think that Hanninen would be a good fit. And also, if he ever hears this podcast, I am available to be your agent. Because I will pimp you into the next millennium.
or at least to interview you.
Exactly. I will interview you as well. So for sure, you know, something to look at going forward. But that's really all we have for Rally this week. Andreas Mikkelsen. He has signed with Skoda to continue to compete with Skoda next year. He will be in a factory-prepared Fabia, but as opposed to racing for Skoda UK, he'll be part of Skoda Italia team, the Italian Skoda importer. As you know, Skoda likes to have their teams are represented by their manufacturer, the importers of their manufacturer, you know, of their cars. So you've got, you know, Skoda UK, and then you also have Skoda Italy and Skoda yada yada. So he will be in a factory prepared Skoda next year, and he will be under the Skoda Italia banner. So there you have that. So let's go ahead and move into IndyCar as we continue this quick race through the podcast. And like I said at the beginning of the show, Lotus has finally pulled their head out of the sand and have made some announcements. Announced earlier this week that, or it was late last week, actually, not earlier this week because it's only Monday. They announced last week that HVM, Brian Herd Autosport, and Ryan Reinbold are all going to be factory teams along with Michael Schenck Racing.
Yeah, Michael Schenck is a – they're going to be a strict engine lease type situation, whereas HVM, Ryan Reinbold, and Brian Herd are going to have some sort of factory involvement.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like those three teams have committed to purchase one engine at this point.
Okay.
And they are working on funding for potentially, you know, three more entries total. Yeah. So it'd be a total of possibly six from them, but right now it's a total of three. Michael Schenck has committed to one engine. So currently Lotus is committed to four engines.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where that one goes.
Yeah, well, it's good finally to hear from them. Yeah, you know, first
get their head out of the
proverbial sand.
Okay, sand, I guess is up.
Yeah, right. If they have sand over there in the UK,
in Malaysia, this program is being run out of.
We also know that Lotus is also working very hard to secure the teams Dale Coyne Racing, Ed Carpenter Racing, and Dragon and whatnot, Conquest, I think, as well in there. You know, they're trying to bring the Lotus Judd, if you will, engine to those teams as well heading into 2012 as a perhaps cheaper and slightly more, I guess flexible option, if you will. So, you know, again, I think I think that, you know, I think we'll see more Lotus powered teams are to be announced, according to Marshall Pruitt, in the coming days. It'll be interesting to see who signs with who and what kind of contracts we're looking at, because, you know, we were really down on the Lotus Judd at the beginning because they weren't saying anything to anybody. Communication obviously is paramount in anything, and we were getting none of that from Lotus. However, now it appears that, you know, all is on schedule. Do not fret. Yes, we're a little late to testing, but our engine offers a little bit more and is a little bit cheaper. Or not so much cheaper, but a bit more flexible, really, because of its 20 kilo weight.
Allegedly.
Yeah, alleged weight difference. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see where the team goes from there. And I think they'll be okay. I don't think we'll see too many big time problems out of there. Like we've said on the show before, Judd is a proper engine manufacturer. These guys are not some team, like, you know, that just came out of the woodwork. I think that Judd has a good chance of producing a pretty damn good engine for the series, and I'll be interested to see where they go. I think there may be a problem, though, where the teams they've selected to run, and no offense, please, to the teams that are set with HVM and Dryan Reinbold, because I love all the teams, really, in IndyCar. But I think that, you know, you don't have a Ganassi. You don't have a Penske or an Andretti, a big-time team with resources. Yeah. All of these teams are wee little teams that don't really have a ton of money to put into it, and I think that while the Lotus will be a decent engine, I don't think the results will necessarily show that because of those resource issues.
Well, I think it's telling, and I think it's very telling, that Lotus had the opportunity – you know, while, you know, the flagship teams were locked up with Chevy and Honda, you know, those teams were assigned really early on. Mm-hmm. You had Ganassi going with Honda. You had Penske going with the Chevy. Mm-hmm. And it took a while before anything else was announced, but you had Andretti out there. You had KV out there, and you still have HVM out there. Those are three teams that you could build your engine program around, and they didn't secure any of them.
Yeah.
HVM, I guess, is a possibility. Or not HVM. Newman Haas is still a possibility.
Yeah.
But I sincerely doubt that's going to happen. I mean, we've been hearing rumors that Newman Haas is going with Chevy, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to it'd have to be Honda, wouldn't it? Because Chevy's already locked up three big teams.
Yeah, I think it was Honda or Lotus is pretty much it for them.
I don't see any possibility that Lotus really can, you know, they're not going to. HVM, Herta, and Dryan Reinbold. Yeah, Herta, you know, they've done some things. I mean, they were part of the Indy winning effort this year, but really they're a journeyman team with very little under their belt. HVM, they haven't done all that well for themselves. You know, they've come in and shown they've been a low budget, underfunded team. Yeah. Dryan Reinbold has made its history as a low budget, underfunded team.
Yeah.
Which would hire anybody as long as they had a paycheck. So it doesn't bode well that those have been announced as Lotus's factory efforts. And the fact that they announced three single car factory efforts even lends more to that.
Mm-hmm.
There are six remaining teams left. You've got Ed Carpenter, you've got Dale Coyne, you've got Conquest, Eric Bachelard's group, Dragon, Jay Penske's group. You've got Newman Haas and Sarah Fisher.
Yeah.
All of those could be any, you know, Ed Carpenter's going to be one car. Coyne, possibly two. Conquest, probably one. Dragon, probably one. Newman Haas, probably two. Sarah Fisher, one.
Yeah.
In the end, I imagine Newman Haas and Sarah Fisher are not going to be with Lotus. And the other teams will be.
Huh.
Because of their position in the paddock.
Yeah.
I think it's a pecking order thing. I think that Chevy had to wait for Lotus to start signing teams before they could go out and sign more.
Yeah.
Or Chevy Honda, both. So, yeah. Anyway.
As the world turns in IndyCar.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be interesting to see how this one shakes out. And the consensus still has to be that Lotus took their sweet time.
Oh, yeah.
And while some interesting comments are made in these articles talking about how, you know, HVM, Herta and Tryon Reinbold, you know, talk up Lotus and their entry and everything like that. But what they're not saying is we're going to be taking delivery of our chassis here in like 4 weeks, 3 weeks, and we're not going to even see a motor strapped to it until mid-January.
Check out our sweet new 2012 IndyCar.
Yeah, don't exactly. Isn't this pretty? Yeah. We've got nice toasters.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. So.
Yeah, we'll see. Moving forward, it looks like that finally enough is enough out in Sonoma, or Snoroma, as many people have dubbed it. And it looks like the IndyCar, the people over at Infineon Raceway are asking IndyCar teams and drivers for some help. Hmm. You know, how can we make adjustments to our IndyCar layout to better suit your cars? And I think that's a positive thing, because I'm going to be quite blatantly honest, that race sucks. It's really boring, and like nothing you can do makes it not boring. And it's not the track's fault. It's not really the car's fault, to be honest. It's just not overly conducive to a high passing volume around the track. It's a blast to drive, you know, that layout. However, not so awesome, you know, with the not so awesome to watch. And in order to curb that going forward, Infineon has, you know, asked the teams and drivers to put in their inputs and how we can make, you know, the proverbial we here, dude, man, is what we're trying to do to make it a better spectacle. Because let's face it, if this race continues to suck as bad as it does, it's not going to be on the schedule much longer. So
yeah, I think that there are legitimate reasons to keep this on the schedule over, say, going to Laguna Seca.
Mm-hmm.
The track is not one of them. It's the location. It's the hospitality that they can draw to the track. In the end, it's a better location than Laguna Seca, but the racing has not been great. We've been through several iterations of this track layout. That's the thing that really has to be brought up. Okay, they're looking at making some changes, but it would be among many changes that have been made to the layout for IndyCar.
Yeah.
Typically, the changes seem to revolve around the end of the drag strip going into that hairpin down there and making it faster or slower, or the exit or the entry or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some, you know, various options that have been at least talked about, but the fact of the matter remains, it's not been a good track for IndyCar. And what's interesting is it's only an 11-turn road course. I was really shocked by that, with all of the, you know, twists and dippy-doos that they have in the full course layout. I mean, you go the NASCAR course layout, I can't imagine. That must be like 6 turns because they take out the boot, you know?
Exactly. That difficult.
Yeah.
That difficult. We only go left. We don't do that.
Yeah, well, you know. Anyway.
Just kidding. Don't send me hate mail. I'm only kidding. Anyways.
Yeah, you called out Speed Geek last week, and man, he laid into you.
He did. He was not happy. I was only kidding. I told him in the show that I said it just for him, and I thought that he would take my sarcasm. I was just kind of prodding and poking there a little bit to try to get a reaction. But I don't think that Hamilton can only win if Vettel pulls out. Honestly, I don't. And he was happy. He said that if I wanted hate mail, I got it. I most certainly did get it. And I appreciate it. Thank you for making it. At least you respond and listened. You know, you can say what you want. As long as you listen and respond, I'm fine. I'm fine.
I thought so, that was great, though.
Yeah, I guess
he called out your boy.
I know he did. What the hell? Come on, leave the cobbler out of this. He's having a hard time of it, okay? He doesn't know what the hell he wants anymore. But anyways.
IndyCar is going to remain at Sonoma because it's a better option. As much as I'd rather they be at Laguna Seca because I prefer Laguna Seca over Sonoma, it's the better option for hospitality and all of that kind of stuff that's pretty important to IndyCar. You know, as we've talked about in the past, teams have been going out and, you know, this was even before they went to Versus, they were not trying to sell the series on their television ratings. They were trying to sell the series on the hospitality they could do at the track and the, you know, the activation among your business and bring out your clients to the track and that kind of stuff. Yeah, so I can't see them going away from that track. So anything they can do to make the racing better, do I think it'll make much of a difference? No. No, I have no illusions that it will. There's too much of that track that you can't change that, you know, you once you go into that little basically from the drag, you get on the drag strip and you make the hairpin at the end of the drag strip, and if you haven't passed by then, it's too late.
And you're done for the rest of the lap.
Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. There seemed to be plenty. The passing location at the track this year seemed to be the kind of the hairpin back at the parking lot in the middle of the track where you know, they cut through, they cut off the big chunk that NASCAR does. There seemed to be plenty of faux for taking there because they had to remain, you know, leave the inside lane open so somebody could put them in the outside wall there. But nice. Anyway, yeah, that's enough on Snornoma because I'm getting tired of talking of it.
I don't know, you're putting me to sleep already, and I mean, we're only just talking about it. I mean, it's not even the race, and you're already doing this to me. Come on.
Watch our race at Sonoma. It's better than Ambien.
That's just gold. Anyways, so let's talk. So let's talk about
Sleeping Troubles. We recommend the IndyCar series. Side effects, maybe not caring what the heck Danica does in NASCAR.
No. Now look at you. You're just pissing all kinds of people off with that kind of language.
If you're listening to the show and you're a huge Danica fan, yeah, you picked the wrong show.
Yeah, we don't much. We don't get along well.
Well.
All right. Well, anyways, let's see. Let's go to the 1.5 mile ovals here. And it looks like IndyCar, you know, the teams in the series are working to make the 1.5 mile tracks safer.
Yeah.
Less dangerous, as you put it.
Let me characterize this. This is some talk from Will Phillips. He's one of the technical directors in IndyCar, newly hired. He was brought in with the whole minor regime change that's been going on with the whole deal with bringing on the new chassis and engine and all that kind of stuff. But the general consensus, quote Will Phillips, the general consensus was that we need to make the drivers have to drive the cars and not be running flat out a half lap after they get on the track. And then not, you know, basically you don't decelerate on these mile and a half ovals. The funny thing about that comment is, really? Because I've never heard any of the drivers ever say that.
Oh,
they
no,
never,
right?
Never, ever say, boy, we're bunched up too close together and we never lift. And good grief, this has been something that people have been crying about for years.
Oh, yeah.
Is it just that I hate to be this way and I'm sorry. Does it take somebody dying before you actually listen to the drivers? Because the drivers have been begging for you to change this for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same thing you hear in NASCAR restrictor plate racing. They don't want it because of the way it bunches up the cars.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, everybody knows you're doing 225 miles an hour average. around that track, around, you know, a mile and a half track, not lifting, running wheel to wheel, literally inches apart from each other. Mm-hmm. That does not foster a safe work environment. I mean, granted, racing is not safe anyways, as we've all said, but that's just excessively stupid. And the drivers have said up and down all day long, you know, like you said, we need to stop this. I remember Tony Kanaan and Dario Franchitti, you know, a couple years ago saying this.
Yeah.
And then one horrendous tragedy happens, and now it's like, yeah, maybe we should do that. Maybe you should have done it a long time ago. And like you said, does it really take a tragedy to finally get people to open up their ears and listen to what the hell people have to say?
And I do have to, you know, go from the other side as a fan. Boy, I enjoy it. I love seeing those cars, you know, side by side, lap after lap and everything like that. It's been interesting watching this format, but we can't put the format above the safety of the drivers in this one. Do I think they need to make it so the drivers are always single file and the only passing attempts are bumps from behind? No, I don't think that. But there has to be some other way to go about this. Since this incident, we've been hearing over and over again about, you know, taking away the downforce and putting in the driver's hands. You go as fast as you want into the dang corner, but you've got to lift it to make it through. That would create the separation, the different braking points, the different lines that would have to be developed as people's car setups would influence more their braking points than, well, everybody's got the same setup because their wings are laid at the same angle and da-da-da-da-da. I would be interested to see a good argument for that direction. You know, as far as, you know, giving the horsepower they need to really, you know, come out of those corners hot. But getting down to the other end of the track, they've got to put on the binders and they've got to get that car shifted down so they can make a good exit from the corner.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see that. Don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if they're actually going to maybe listen this time. This could be one of those situations where they're like, you know, we've already gone way too far in the new car development, and that under tray, you know, this big giant sculpted piece of carbon fiber that we've got on the bottom of the car, it's going to create whatever downforce it creates, and there's nothing you can do to change that. The only thing you can do is change the wing angles on top.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's just I guess we'll just have to see where it goes. Hopefully there's still time. But you're right, when you start talking about things like an IndyCar and any really winged formula, you know, you're talking about lots and lots of research and development that's already gone on the car just to put it out there now.
Yeah.
So, you know, perhaps introduce a honestly, I don't know what you would do, because this is kind of when we need Doug and his engineering prowess. Yeah. But I honestly don't know what you would do. But you're right, it's awfully late in the design of the car. You know, they're already testing the car, and that aerodynamic package is set. However, you know, like we said before, the last week I think it was, the car is not overly fantastic on the ovals at this moment. So hopefully there's still, you know, here's hoping to hope that we can, you know, we can get something done to get the cars to slow down a bit or at least spread out. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is at the end of the day, we bitched because, you know, we were going to races like Kansas and the racing was strung out. Yeah, it was high speed and it was a snoozer because nobody was really passing anybody. Mm-hmm. But you see what happens? We bitched and bitched, and then we finally got a new, you know, we got these new devices added to the car so that we could get closer, more exciting racing, and then this happens.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden nobody wants it anymore, and for damn good reason. It's dangerous and really, really scary for the drivers. Who cares what we think? It's not our lives on the line, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
The guys on track side have been talking about this quite a bit, and, you know, I'll just go into it briefly. Was the real danger in this accident the speed that the accident happened? I don't think that that's the case. I think the real danger in the accident was the track was, you know, like they were saying, and I'll agree with them, The track was completely blocked when the incident happened. Mm-hmm. So these guys had no escape route, none mm-hmm. whatsoever, because there were three and four wide cars in front of them.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I think they pointed out that, Will Powers, he was at the back of the pack when this happened, and he was able to get it down into the 160 range,
mm-hmm.
and he still had that monstrous, you know, air launch hitting into the wall and everything like that. It wasn't the speed that caused him to go 160 miles an hour into the wall. It was the fact that there was nowhere for him to go.
Mm-hmm. And again, the pack racing mentality.
Well, the pack racing, the fact you don't have brakes on those cars that are capable of doing that. No brake is capable of stopping like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was it was interesting for sure to see them try to react. But like you said, just nowhere to go. And it's just, I mean, it's not overly the speed because we see him do it in Indianapolis every year. With little to no, you know, obviously we have people with some broken backs who get launched into the catch fins, which is still not good. But it's better in a weird, sick, twisted way. I can't believe I used the word better, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I would rather have a driver suffer injury and still be alive than have a driver, you know, killed because of something like that. And, you know, Indianapolis is kind of that way because there is usually an escape route or two. But a track like that, there's just not when you're running that wide of a track, you know, at that kind of speed, there's just no place to go. And, you know, that's just the way it is. So,
those things out of the way, one last comment on IndyCar.
Okay.
I'm going to start it now.
All right.
We're going to start the Brian Barnhart Media Watch.
Oh God.
And the only reason I say that is I haven't seen his name in the media for the last 2 weeks.
Hmm. He's down on the Miami beaches sipping Mai Tais and mojitos.
Well, I think they're – how do I put this? I'm thinking he's being relegated out of the spotlight.
Slowly,
not necessarily slowly, but you got this tragedy which he's not being part of the media front for. Your technical director – for the series, you think should be.
Yeah.
I'm just making a little bit of a guess on this, and you can all laugh at me when I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like he's being pushed at least out of the spotlight when it comes to race control and things of that nature. I wonder if he's going to be in IndyCar next year, or is he going to be, you know, front office guy, but not a race day guy. We'll see.
Well,
with that,
let's go ahead and move right along into the Formula One section. Our last section for tonight. These short shows, people, don't get used to them because when the season kicks back off, it's over. All rules are off. But it was announced today that Pedro De La Rosa, you may remember him from such fame as the McLaren Mercedes reserve driver who nobody ever seen or heard, except when he was complaining.
Except when Kimi fully mounted his teammate.
yes. Well, he's now in the news as he will be a race day driver. Driving for the new Valencia-bound HRT team.
Ooh, yes.
Talk about... Oh, crap. You know, and somewhere in the world, Rubens Barrichello is pissed because that's another seat that he's not going to be getting.
Oh, jeez.
The more and more the world turns, the more and more it looks like Sunday may be Rubens' last Grand Prix.
Yeah, it'd be good to finish on home soil. With a win, right? Right.
Well, and Hulkenberg
scored 5 points this year.
Hulkenberg secured pole position in it last year, albeit kind of awkward. Weather situations, which he was then. Oh, you want pole position? You're fired. What? What the hell just happened? You're right. It's not gonna be. You know, a finish for him would be as good as a win on Sunday.
Yeah. Now, this Thiessen Capital, I don't know how to pronounce it, they are now the new owners of HRT. They've been buying stake in it, and now, you know, they're solely owning it. They're a Spanish company, and they're in process of moving the team, you know, basically to one of those empty container yards that you see along the Valencia track. For some reason, they think that will be good. I mean, for off-season testing, it'll be great because most of them are down in those warmer climes. But as far as a full-season base, I don't know about that one. Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised if they move their entire effort to Valencia, if it's just like a technology center or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we've got three things happening in this one that are just boggling me.
Okay.
Number one, somebody bought HRT. Number two,
it's a good investment, man.
Number two, the person who bought it thought it's a good idea to move them to Valencia. And number three, they thought hiring Pedro de la Rosa would be a good move. Don't know about any of those. Maybe they're hiring PDR because they think he can do the development they need to improve the car. And unless they're willing to invest a bunch of money in that team, it won't be improved, obviously, because, well, have you seen their score sheet? Nice. It says zero. They're tied for last at zero.
It's a heated battle, let me tell you.
Yeah, with the fearless privateer teams that came in under the Max Mosley ill-gotten team addition strategy.
Nice.
So, anyway, it was actually funny. I told you before the show, I read Joe Sayward's piece on this whole deal, and he was just mocking everything to do with it. He's a venerable F1 journalist, but, you know, on his website, in his blog, you know, he goes away from his venerableness and every now and then spits a little vim and vigor. That's exactly what he did there. Just kind of mocking it. He said, when will these people learn that you don't come in as rich people and buy a junk F1 team and do something with it?
Yeah.
And what in your right mind thinks it's a good idea to move the team away from the ancestral home of F1 out of England, move it all the way to Spain, and you're going to do fine there. It'll be just perfect. It's kind of like, you know, AJ Foyt's team out there in Texas. Nobody wants to go to work for AJ, not because they don't want to work for AJ. They just don't want to limit their opportunities by going to work for a team in Texas, where if things don't work out, they've got to move back to Indiana.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bad deal. So.
Well, you know, looking at this way, you'll be closer to your Rev.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be better for off season. And, hey, they've got the European Grand Prix at Valencia Street Circuit and – and if you talk to Bob Varshi, you'll be able to sit and watch those yachts that he always talked about during the inaugural race that was on TV. So, yeah.
Well, maybe they're deciding they're going to be kind of a dual team. They're going to be HRT F1 and HRT America's Cup.
Oh,
there you go.
Interesting.
Couldn't you see it like an F1 car with a mast coming out of its top?
Oh, my God. Probably wouldn't hurt them any. well, let's see. Looking at moving on here from the joke that is HRT to the joke that is the United States in Formula One. this situation just sucks to high hell. And this Austin Grand Prix, just nobody knows what's going on. All we know at the moment is nothing is going on.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is this. Bernie wants to exit. And, I mean, this is just a long line of suck for the United States here in recent memory for Formula One. Let's take a – as you've done such a good job of on the notes, you've really laid it out here. Dateline, Indianapolis, 2005. fans are rioting and about to bring the city of Indianapolis to its knees after only, what, six cars compete in the United States Grand Prix, which one in which Schumacher dominates and one which Jordan scored a pole or a podium when they shouldn't have, while their happy-go-lucky driver was bouncing around on the podium, and yeah. Schumacher nearly bitch-smacked him clean off of it.
Since 1909, never has a drink bottle been thrown on that track until 2005.
Yeah, and that place was nearly brought to its knees by people from Venezuela, Colombia, England, Italy. I'm glad I was – I don't ever say this, but that was one time that I was happy to be in tech school.
Every year they ran that race, the Holman George family came out there and presented all the trophies.
Mm-hmm.
That year, it was F1 people presenting the trophies.
Hey, Bernie, like, do your job.
Here's our backside.
Right? Then you bring about Peter Windsor, Ken Anderson, and you have – USF1, the team that was going to be all U.S. Well, it was going to be all U.S., run from the U.S., U.S. drivers, and really displaying that the United States has an awesome ability to present a Formula One product. And then it became known as USF1.5 because it was going to be an American car company or American Formula One team with foreign drivers just for the first couple of years to shake things out. Then it became USF 1.25 when they decided that maybe it would be best if we had two locations, one of which would be in, well, Valencia.
Nice.
And that fell in. Now we have the Austin Grand Prix, the Circuit of Americas, the state-of-the-art Tilkeydrome that would finally grace the United States, a Tilkey track on United States soil. That's like having a terrorist training camp in the United States.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, I went there.
You did.
And you know, it's that bad, the neutered situation. This track layout looked like it had promise, and by God, V8 supercars, American DTM, and MotoGP, Formula One, long-term contracts with all of them. Let's just get all of them on the docket. We've got $25 million from the big events fund here in Texas because everything's bigger here in Texas until we realize they're not going to give us an advance on the money.
Mm.
Because we were sorely misinformed, apparently, by the Texas State Comptroller. Right before you do that,
go ahead.
Did you see the interview that somebody did? I think it was F1 Statesman Austin Statesman on Twitter. Guy always has fantastic information about the race and stuff going on down there. And they actually did an interview with the comptroller lady.
Yeah.
And she absolutely acted like they were wasting her time. I mean, it was absolutely scathing remarks from her to the people conducting the Q&A. And she's like, She's like, don't ask me. She's like, go talk to that guy, whoever, is involved in this whole entire situation.
Tavo Hellman.
Yeah, Tavo Hellman. Or go talk to the guys at the Circuit of Americas and go talk to this guy. I mean, she was just like, what the hell do you want from me?
Yeah, I think when the whole story of this is told, it's going to go something like this. Tavo was able to get the contract from Bernie because he and Bernie are friends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Supposedly Tavo was bounced on Bernie's knee as a young boy, that kind of thing. They've known each other for years and Tavo's grown up and Bernie's always had, a fond recognition of him, whatever. I think that, Bernie gave him the contract for this F1 race. They thought they had some things that looked promising. And as time went on, Tavo didn't have a track. He was basically going to, get the contract and then promote the race at a track built by others,
mm-hmm.
Privately funded by others. I don't know where this all fell apart, but I think part of it fell apart because Tavo's end couldn't get all the paperwork signed and dotted and filled out and completed.
Yeah.
Don't know why that is. Could it be because the track didn't have enough money and they were, you know, stalling and stalling until they got the money? Could it be that, you know, that there were things, obligations on Tavo's end that needed to be done? My impression of it was Texas was more than willing to pay them that money, mm-hmm. the $25 million advance. But the more and more things went on and things didn't get done correctly, and Tavo, you know, this is what Bernie said, Tavo's group was in breach of contract for months.
Yeah.
Until they finally canceled his contract. And that's when Circuit of America or CODA, whatever they are, of the Americas, there we are. That's when they were trying to negotiate directly with Bernie, and he's like, hey, Tavo's got the contract. You need to negotiate with my buddy Tavo because he's like, such an upright, upstanding dude that he's defaulted on this contract.
He's in breach of contract. Bad.
Yeah, Bernie told him that. You need to talk with Tavo. You need to get this worked out between you two. I mean, his flippant comment to the press was they're going to have a race over there, or they were going to have a race over there, and there's a promoter and a track, and they never talk to each other.
Yep.
Well, you got to know that that's not the case. I mean, it's not that simple, Bernie. Everything you make things out to be so freaking simple sometimes, and it's ridiculous. Somewhere there's money that just didn't come that they thought was going to come in, and I think the state of Texas was looking at it and said, we're not touching this with a 10-foot pole. You want the funding? You get this together yourself. You fund it yourself because you've not shown that we're investing wisely.
Yeah. I agree 100%. And that's basically what it does is she says, you know, we have to do what's best for, you know, the taxpayers. And we're not getting warm and fuzzies about this whatsoever.
Well, and then beyond that, as we talked about before, it's government money that's going to help you run this event year on year. It's not government money building the track, but if there's a concern that the government money isn't going to come in, mm-hmm. funding for the track isn't going to come in. You don't build a $250 million track just to hold V8 supercar races.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Oh, for sure.
Anyway. What a sad situation. I'm gutted for the people in Austin. You know, Bernie supposedly last week gave a 7-day ultimatum to Circuit of the Americas. Basically, you've got to have, you know, your funding secured, letters of credit, and everything signed, and $25 million in my pocket, or however much the sanctioning fee is.
Yeah.
Or this is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So then they talked a bit this week about possibly 2013. If it doesn't happen in 2012, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And Jersey apparently is a done deal.
Man, Jersey's apparently a done deal, but so was Austin. Signed, sealed, and delivered.
Well, yeah, but I think, like, it's not – the situation in Jersey is not nearly as complex as what it was in Austin, where you have two separate entities, you know, not necessarily on the same terms with each other. Granted, I think they were talking to each other, maybe not on the same sheet of music. But at the end of the day, you know, I think, you know, Jersey is ready to go. I think they've got a track, they've got the investors, and we'll see where it goes from there. But it'll be interesting for sure. So, and that being said, shall we head down to the season finale for the Formula One guys? Finally, the Vettel Parade will be over for this year.
For this year. For the time being, tune back in March.
Exactly.
I don't know, man. I'm happy to see him at Interlagos after the ridiculous glitz and glamour of Yas Marina.
Ugh.
Interlagos is a great circuit. It really is. I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, they've got some safety concerns there, specifically dealing with that backstretch coming back up the hill. The pit entry specifically is kind of shaky, but that's mainly because they allow the cars to basically drive through the pit entry to make their lap times faster. It'd be pretty easy to put a big old white line there and say, none shall pass, you know. But,
you know, they've got they're landlocked by, you know, urban development, or should I say, urban sprawl all around them, the slums that are Interlagos, unfortunately. It's too bad. Yeah, and I'm hopeful that they can, you know, it sounds like that there's some major talks in the background about improving the track, new facilities, better drainage, as we've seen has been an issue there, with cars basically being washed off the track as they try and make corners.
Yeah.
But man, it's a wonderful track. I love the Senna S's. Those are just fantastic. It's one of the best corners in F1.
I just love the layout of the track altogether. Yeah, I'm a big fan. So, well, I mean, not a whole lot really heading into the season finale. A real good exhibition, perhaps a final goodbye to Rubens Barrichello. But we still have second place in the Drivers' Championship up for grabs, with Jenson Button securing that. He's got that on lockdown for the moment. But Fernando Alonso, only 10 points back, quite a bit further back is Mark Webber at 22 points, provided Button and Alonso collide with each other and Webber wins the race, or at least finishes second. Or no, he needs to win the race.
And out of contention is Hamilton. He's 28 back, so yeah. Jensen basically put the hammer down on his teammate this year, and funny listening to Martin Whitmarsh. Yeah, I think that Hamilton underestimated Jensen this year.
You think?
I think Jensen just did better with the tires. This is my personal opinion.
I think that the regulations being what they are, make things a lot better for. A lot better for Mr. Button, because he's much calmer on the tires. And with that as well.
I hate to say this, but I think that Jensen also had a calmer relationship with his girlfriend during said time.
Oh, for crying out loud. Jeez.
Yeah, my wife watches X Factor, and it's kind of interesting to you know, consider that was his girlfriend and all that. Yeah. She's what, 10 years older than him?
I don't know. Anyway. She's terrible. I don't think she's a good singer. I much prefer Jennifer Lopez to this girl, and Jennifer Lopez is even older than her.
Anyway.
Well, we still have some teams with something to fight for. Potential for Scuderia Toro Rosso to move up to sixth in the championship, perhaps. I provided some really good luck for them and some really terrible luck for Force India. But really the battle comes down to 7th and 8th in the championship between Sauber Ferrari and Scuderia Toro Rosso. Sauber Ferrari at 42 points and STR at 41. I almost said Scuderia again because it's just fun to say that word.
you've got STR, you got Squadra.
Squadra.
Squadra Toro Rosso.
Squadra. Yeah, there you go. Squadra Toro Rosso. No, I'm just kidding. But they're really only a point off. And the Toro Rosso has been running pretty good here in the last part of the season. Some say because of help from Red Bull. I say I don't necessarily believe that to be 100% of the truth. Well, but it is kind of a shocking uptick, if you will.
Yeah, if you want to make those claims, you've got three teams right together that are getting technical help. You know, Force India, Sauber Ferrari, and STR. Of those, I would say Sauber is probably the least likely to be getting technical help.
Yeah.
Because like, they're aligned with Ferrari, and Ferrari does not help.
Ferrari doesn't help anybody but Ferrari. Teams. Yeah. Yes. Ferrari needs to help themselves, seeing as though they're close to 300 points out of first place.
Here's your engine. See if it pops.
Roll the dice. See what happens. So it'll be interesting to see. I think going forward, I'm going to have to give the nod to... it's obvious that Vettel's going to win the race, in my opinion.
I think that that's how the season ends, Vettel finishing the season strong.
But
records for him.
I think the one thing that's truly up on the blocks is I think that Sauber Ferrari will hang on just against Scuderia Toro Rosso.
Yeah, I don't see anybody touching Renault though.
Oh no, Renault.
It's not going to catch up to him. I mean, feasibly in the points, yes, you could. I mean, they could get like what, 25 points for a win, and then what, 20 for second? Is that how that breaks down? I don't know. So they could get like 40 some points, max. But it's not going to happen. They haven't shown any capability of doing that this year. I mean, it's just like looking down 10th, 11th, and 12th. All season long, Lotus Renault, HRT Cosworth, and Virgin Cosworth, those three teams have failed to score a single point. When points are paid out to the top 10. 10?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, four cars crash and you've got a chance of scoring points. It's beyond me how those teams haven't stumbled into points.
I don't know.
Williams, boy, they're hopeless. Hey, let's float on the stock market because nothing could hurt our value.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know.
Yeah, anyway.
You know.
I think their flotation on the stock market is a microcosm of their season. We've got a great idea. Let's float in the stock market. Hey, we get all this money. Hey, this is great. Whoa, look at our market value. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Win on Sunday, dividend on Monday.
Well, anyways.
Yeah.
Moving forward from there, that really rounds out all the shows – or all the show that we have left. Mm-hmm. I will say this. I'm jumping out on a limb here. First off, I want to say congratulations to our friend Nick, whose last name I will not be able to pronounce whatsoever. He is on Twitter, one of our followers on the Twitter. He won the inaugural of our three speed giveaways for the V8 supercars. Cool. He doesn't even know it yet. But he won the first contest. He will be receiving a baseball hat, a beanie, and a t-shirt from speedtv.com. Stay tuned this week as we will now move ahead in our tape delayed coverage contest. So we will post the challenge question after Thanksgiving sometime. So keep it at openpaddock.net and look for us to be posting the second challenge question and prepare yourself for another Speed TV giveaway. Very happy to be giving that stuff away. And also, here it is. I was thinking about this just after we talked about him, but I have opened up a position for Speed Geek at this website. If he wants to come on and be the stat man for this show, he can come on and be the stat man, where he comes on, corrects us, keeps us in line because Lord knows we need it. And also, if he doesn't want that, he can come on next week's show. We'll invite you to next week's show. Or if you don't want to do that either, we can have you just do an interview where you and I can debate the finer points of Formula One.
Yeah, and wrap up Formula One season.
Yes. So I'm extending an open invitation as an award for your, you know, a reward, if you will, for your patronage to this site and show. You can come on the show if you want. You can be a part of the show if you want, or you can just have a nice drag-out beer bar brawl bash that is Formula One, and you can take up arms for Lewis Hamilton, and I will take up arms for my German contingents, Mr. Vettel and Mr. Schumacher, and we shall have a battle. And also wrap up the 2011 season. So there it is. Be looking forward to hearing from you. Outside of that, we don't have anything else. I hope everybody here in the United States who listens has a fantastic Thanksgiving. I wish the same for you and your family, Mike.
Thank you.
So hope it's a good one. I will be driving to the Lafayette, Indiana region for my Thanksgiving.
So well, I'll say hi when we pass you on 70 because we're heading to Terre Haute.
All right, then. I'll be looking for the Yoda with a double-decker diffuser. High speed, low drag.
Well, you know, I mean, we've had to make some modifications since the FIA's made some changes. So the double-decker isn't as apparent as before, but it does have this fancy little button on the inside of the cockpit that allows air from the sunroof to
force the chassis down.
Yeah, it's our own little F-duct.
Nice. I have a downforce creator, as I call it. That's when I put my moonroof into the slightly canted position.
Oh, there you go.
So, you know, a little extra.
Look at you, all Steve Kinzer.
I know, right? I'm kicking that bitch sideways. So, hanging it out to dry. That's how we roll, sons and daughters. So, all right, well, that's all we have for this week. I want to say a special thank you to everybody. I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will be back here soon next week for another fantastic episode of the Open Paddock Podcast, episode 113.
Very nice. So, good night.
All right, good night. Have a good week.